originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. You're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, together once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, and looking forward to the next hour as we bring you another visit with a trainer who has had an awful lot of success in this sport. And we've talked to trainers who are just getting started. We've talked to trainers who are more established over the past few years here on Trainer Talk. And it never gets old, JT. It's always fun to hear those stories.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to tonight. I see this guy's name in the program and in the past performances, and I've never met him. So I'm really looking forward to this.
You see his show. Name in the charts a lot too, like down below where it gives the winning trainer. He's in there an awful lot.
Absolutely. That's the best place to be found, actually.
Absolutely. We want to welcome everybody tuning in on Sirius 219 XM 206 and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget, if you miss any portion of the show, you can go to our website and check out a podcast on our website as well. Well, tonight's guest, born in Alberta, Canada, and has had an awful lot of success in his career. He's already trained more than 1,700 winners. They've earned more than $25 million in purses. Began training in 1995, and as you can tell, it's been a great ride for Robertino Diodoro, who joins us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Robertino, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Happy to have you on board and looking forward to hearing the story. First of all, congratulations on all the success.
No, thank you. It's been a good run lately, and hopefully we can keep it going here.
How does a guy from Alberta, Canada, end up winning more than 1,700 races? Take us back to the beginning. How did this all begin?
Honestly, started right from the bottom. Was training up in Alberta on the B tracks. There's a track just outside of Calgary, Alberta, at one time. Trout Springs, and then, of course, Stampede Park right in Calgary. Started training there, Northlands Park, which I still have a small string in Edmonton, Alberta, and Lethbridge, Alberta. So those were kind of the four tracks that I started at, and literally started off with one horse that my grandpa gave me and worked my way up. I think the first time I come to the U.S. was opening year of Emerald Downs, which I think that was 96. I took, they had a winter meet there, and took four horses down and for the winter. So that was a good experience. And then roughly 12, 13 years ago, I started going to Turf Paradise in the winter, and then just started branching off from there. Went to Cala. I think this is about the fifth year having a string of horses in Santa Anita. And like I said, just each year we've been just slowly spreading out.
It was a nice progression of things. When you first started out, did you work for any other trainers, or did you know horses from the time you were young?
No, I learned a lot from my grandpa. He was just a small trainer, but around the horses all his life, Jim Dorman, and I learned a lot from him and also my dad. Never trained on his own, but was always with the horses, and he helped me out a lot, especially back in the day when a guy couldn't get enough help or couldn't afford help, put it that way. You know, we had, like I said, I started right from the bottom with $3,000 horses. And I remember there was times I had 15, 20 horses, and my dad and I and maybe one stall cleaner, and we'd be there all day long. So, like I said, I give a lot to my dad and grandpa for teaching me, and then worked for a few other trainers along the way. A good friend of mine that still trains up in Canada, Greg Tracy, he's been the leading trainer in Northlands and one of the top trainers in Hastings Park in Vancouver the last few years. Worked for him and learned a lot from him, and a few other guys along the way, but like I said, I think a lot of it probably my dad and grandpa, and then, like I said, Greg Tracy.
So it was kind of a family business for you, huh?
Yeah. You know, like I said, my grandpa was always just a small trainer. He only had 2-3 horses, and that's how I started. Is, you know, kind of the, you know, started off on the bush track. I remember I had 2-3 horses and do them in the morning and be a valet and work on the starting gate in the afternoon so I could afford to do it in the summertime. And started doing that probably when I was, I think the first horse I had was roughly 16, 17 years old on the, like I said, on the B tracks in Alberta. And in the wintertime, I'd go play hockey until I was 21. So, and then after that, then I got, you know, kind of training year round. Like I said, it's been roughly 13, 14 years going down to Turf Paradise in the winter, and then just expanded from there.
Well, Robertino, it's no shocker that a kid growing up in Canada would grow up playing hockey, but you're being a little bit modest when you say I played hockey growing up. You were pretty good.
I think the big thing with me is when I look back at it, what went wrong, I think I was I bloomed early, and I think I was good when I was 14, 15, 16, and as hockey got more serious, then I started getting more serious about the racetrack and training horses, and I think that definitely affected my hockey, because as I got hockey got more serious, it got to be more of a year-round thing between working out and summer camps. It, you know, basically become a 11-month a year sport, hockey, and I wanted to be at the racetrack, and so that definitely affected my my hockey career. I remember that was back before a guy had cell phones, and I'd go leave home and go to play hockey in the fall, and there was still racing going on back home, and I'd, after a game, I'd hurry up and have a shower before the team bus would leave so I could run to the payphone to call my parents to see where the, you know, where my grandpa's horse ran that night. So, that definitely affected my my hockey career.
Yeah, it's tough when you play a sport and you love racing. I had a similar situation when I was in high school. They told us we had to come in Saturday and watch films of the football games. And I said, well, I go to the races with my father on Saturday. That won't be possible for me. And they said, well, you can't play if you don't do that. I said, okay. So I got up from the team meeting. I went to the gym. I took off my pads. I put them on the coach's desk, took a shower, and walked home. That was the end of my football career.
Yeah. No, that's I remember the same with soccer. I played soccer 1 year, and it was kind of in the summertime. We'd race in Edmonton, which was 3 hours away. So every Friday, my dad would come home early from work. My mom and dad and I would, my mom would have the car packed up. We'd drive to Edmonton for the weekend. Well, then the next year I went to play soccer. My mom says, hey, you know, you got to decide soccer or we're going to Edmonton. I said, well, I know what the answer to that is. Well, 3 days later, the coach is knocking on the door for me to come back and play soccer. But, no, I wasn't missing the weekend racing, that's for sure.
Robertino, you made it to a pretty high level in hockey, too, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I played junior hockey in Canada and then played a very short period in Jacksonville, Florida, in the East Coast League. But, like I said, you know, my dream was always to, you know, again, a kid from Canada playing the NHL, and I really did think I had a chance. I was about probably 17 or so. Like I said, I could see what was happening. It was just the hockey was getting more serious, and horse racing was getting more serious, and it definitely affected my my play, because my mind was starting to drift away from the hockey.
There are a couple of people here in Lexington that were good friends with John Sakura, Donato Lani over at Hillendale Farm, and they still will try to get out and play every once in a while. They were doing it more a couple of years ago, but how about you? Will you still get out and play?
You know, I can't remember the last time it was, but back training in Alberta, that was spring training. It was once or twice a week. We all rented ice. Actually, the HPPA back home paid for it and rented ice, and we all went and played, but I haven't done that for quite a while.
Do you have a pro team that you root for?
Well, I got to cheer for the Flames. And, you know, I spend a lot of – it's tough cheering for them, but I do cheer for the Coyotes, you know, because I spend a lot of time in Phoenix in the wintertime, and Phoenix has become home, so cheer for the Coyotes. And Settle Indians' brother we bought last fall in Keeneland, and we actually had, of course, Shane Doan after the captain of the Phoenix Coyotes.
Robertino Diodoro, special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As you can tell, he's had a lot of success training horses, but he's had a lot of success in his personal life growing up as an athlete playing hockey as well. Did there come a time, Robertino, where you had to maybe make a choice and say, okay, this is, I have to go one way or the other?
Yeah. No, I could see that coming, you know, right when I was about 20 years old, and I kind of stretched it out a little bit, you know, for another year or so. But by the time I was 21, I knew where my mind was, and you know, I was all gung-ho to go training. And I know at the time my parents and my grandpa was still alive at the time, they weren't too supportive, because they all wanted me to play hockey, so they weren't too happy at the time, that's for sure.
That's got to be tough for a parent, like hockey or horse racing. It's not like, at least they didn't want you to be a doctor or a lawyer or something.
Yeah.
Either one was going to be fun, huh?
Yeah. Well, my mom's side of the family, it was all, they all played hockey, and then some of them all had something to do with racing a little bit, so, yeah.
You know, you talked about getting started with some low-level claimers and being at the barn pretty much sun up to sun down with your dad working around the shed row. Was there ever a time when Robertino Diodoro said, you know what, maybe I made the wrong call, maybe I should still be playing hockey?
No, definitely. There was many times, you know, like I said, it definitely wasn't easy starting. And, you know, there's even days now that, you know, this game can be tough for sure. And, no, there was definitely times that I was thinking, you know, what am I doing? And I remember I still get bugged about it once in a while, because I told a couple friends of mine, I remember I was having a bad year. It was maybe about my second or third year training. I said, excuse me. I said in the fall, I said, that's it. I'm going to quit training horses. I'm going to ask my parents to lend me some money, and I'm going to start a janitor company up.
A janitor company? Where'd that come from?
I don't know. Actually, I've always got bugged about being Mr. Clean, and I don't know. I thought that might be that might be a thing, but that didn't go very far. I didn't get off the ground anywhere.
Was there a time, you know, like early on, where you felt like you had a breakthrough, like, you know, I had the confidence to say, yeah, I can do this, and no matter what happens, I'm gonna follow through? Did you have that moment?
Yeah, you know, I think I know it was only Turf Paradise, but I think after a couple good years in Phoenix, I started, you know, thinking, you know, I can do this at a higher level. And I think, you know, I always had a goal of going to California, and I think that's, you know, we had a couple owners at the time that they wanted to, you know, I brought it to their attention, they wanted to race, you know, give it a try in California, and I think we kind of all had the same attitude, you know, let's go give it a try, and you know, we can do it. So you know, like I said, if it wasn't for the backing of some owners, it wouldn't have been possible either. So, you know, when I went to California, it was all Canadian guys too. You know, the Haugs, you know, Randy Haug and the Weiss boys, Charles Garvey and Bernie Furby at the time. I mean, it was all Canadian guys that kind of stuck with me and, you know, let me have the chance of making it at the next level.
So many trainers who have come on this program over the years talk about the relationship they have with their owners, and in order to be successful in this game, you have to have those good, strong relationships. And it sounds like you feel the same way, Robertino.
No, definitely. You know, so many guys that we train for, I look at the list of owners, and so many of them, I don't really consider them clients. You know, there are some that are, you know, just strictly clients, but so many of them, I don't even consider them a client. They're just considered friends, and a few of them, they're literally like family. You know, I got some guys like Randy Haug, and, you know, I've trained for him for, you know, right from day one, and the Weiss family right behind them, and, you know, the list goes on, you know, and, you know, the guys over the last 4 or 5 years from Canada, the Trombleys, Ted Graylin, I mean, you know, the list goes on, really, and like I said, a lot of those guys I don't even really consider clients. They're more like friends and family, for sure.
Well, they've got to take great pride in you and in what you've accomplished, and the fact that they've been able to grow their stables and improve their stock right along with you.
No, for sure. And, you know, every once in a while we sit back and, you know, laugh about it and joke about it. You know, I remember the first time I claimed, at the time, a half-decent horse for Randy Haug. It was for $8,000. And, you know, we just thought it was a real big deal, and now all of a sudden, we're buying horses for, you know, 75, 100,000, and running horses and winning Oaklawn Handicap. That was Randy Haug, and that horse is going to run in the Met Mile here on the 10th of June. And so, you know, definitely it's given all the owners a chance to expand, and they have. So it's been a pretty good run for quite a few of the guys that have stuck with me.
When you get to that level, Robertino, is there a whole another set of issues maybe, or a whole another set of stress related issues that come along with competing at a higher level that maybe you wouldn't have to deal with at those lower levels with some of the lesser claiming horses?
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I always say if a guy's not competitive, he shouldn't be in this game. And I remember, I still say it still to this day. I mean, I want to win, all the time, and I, you know, a lot of the stress is, you know, I put on myself. You know, I want to win. I don't care if it's a $3,000 claiming race in Turf Paradise, or if it's a graded stake in Oakland or California. So, like I said, I think a lot of the stress I probably put on myself.
Well, you're obviously a very competitive guy. I mean, between the sports and the horse racing and your love of the game, everybody wants to win. But when you're training stakes horses and you're more in the public eye, sometimes that can give you some hardship as well.
No, definitely. You know, you got more people watching you, and excuse me, some of the owners, they definitely put some extra pressure on you too. I mean, it's definitely a part of the game, and, you know, guy just it's how you deal with it, right? And try to do my best to leave it at the barn. Sometimes a guy does end up bringing it home, but the guy definitely wants to leave it at the racetrack, the stress part of it.
Yeah, no doubt. How do you deal with that, Robertino?
Yeah, it's tough some days, you know, and, you know, my assistants, I can't say enough about them. And, you know, they take a lot of the stress off me, too. I mean, between the job they do, and, you know, most of the assistants I got have been with me for a while now, and the owners all know them. And, you know, so the owners talk to them quite a bit, too. So that takes a lot of the stress and pressure off me as well. But, going back to the how I do it, you know, just the work and the stress part of it, if it wasn't for these assistants I got, I can't say enough about them. I mean, they've been loyal. They've really stuck with me. And like I said, I think that's, you look at our stats the last 4 or 5 years, between having, you know, picked up some new owners and better horses, I think a lot of it has to do with the crew we got and the assistants that have stuck with us.
Yeah, I read an article as I was getting ready for the show. I believe it was on Daily Racing Form, where it talked about your first stakes win at Del Mar in July of last year, Patriots Rule, winning the California Dream in Stakes. And you made it a point in that article to praise your assistant, Sean Williams, who was on site with the horse. You were back at Canterbury watching the race, but Sean Williams was there on site. And I thought it was great that you made it a point to bring up his name and credit him for all the work he did.
Yeah, no, he was the first assistant I hired, and then, like I said, he's done a great job, and Then he got a friend of his, Ken Knutson, which has been assistant for me now for, I think, 5 years. And he's just been great. And Rob Attris the last few years, and Brian Hansen in California right now. So, like I said, if it wasn't for these guys, I mean, they're all young guys, and they got the right attitude. They want to win just as bad as I do. They take a lot of pride in it, and they got a lot of loyalty to them. So, I mean, that means a lot.
You spent some time earlier talking about winning in Southern California and how you wanted to have a string in Southern California. You now have that. Is it true that your first win in Southern California actually came on Boxing Day?
Yeah. The first opening day of the winter meet at Santa Anita was on Boxing Day, and it was the first race of the day, too. So I'll never forget it. It was a four-horse photo finish.
So you were the leading trainer at Santa Anita.
Yeah, there you go.
What was it like watching four noses up and down on the line?
Yeah, it was pretty wild. If you ever see the photo finish, I mean, it looked like a quarter horse race. I mean, there were just four of them lined up across the track. It was pretty neat for sure.
Yeah, it's winning a race at Santa Anita is really very special. There's nothing like it, I don't think. Of course, I was born and raised in that area, and the first racetrack I ever went to was Santa Anita, so it's my stomping grounds. But God, it really feels good when you hit the winner's circle at Santa Anita.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Were you on site for that one, Robertino?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Well, that makes it even a little bit better. Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You made a decision this year, Robertino, to open a string in New York for the first time. Tell me about that decision.
That was kind of weird how that came about, to be honest. Kind of caught me off guard. It was about halfway through the Oaklawn meet, and a guy that's been doing a lot of work for us and has helped out our stable, our team, Cody Autry, he asked me if I ever thought of going to New York, and I kind of laughed about it, and he never said nothing for roughly a week, and he brought it up again, and the next thing you know, I was on the phone to California ordering a bunch of new tack, and I called him back, and I said, well, let's go. And he said, are you serious about going? And I said, I just ordered over $10,000 worth of tack from California, so I'm serious. And away we went, and it's worked out really well so far. And again, making a move like that, you got to have guys helping you and supportive owners. And said some of the older owners have supported, and some definitely we've been blessed with some new guys. And again, to make a move like this, you got to have the right team put together, and right from the assistant to guys in the guys behind the scene, and it's all a team effort, and we've put a pretty good team together, I think, just not in New York, the Oaklawn division, and all around, it's really worked out well the last little while.
You talk about your team behind the scenes, and I got to say, your website is about the best trainer's website I've ever seen in my life. It's absolutely beautiful.
No, thank you, and it's a longtime friend of mine, Wayne Dare, that he owns parts of a few horses and does some work, behind the scene for us. And that was one thing that he did, is he got the kind of recreated the website and got it up going here just lately. And again, he's one of those guys, but kind of behind the scene guys that have done a lot of work getting things rolling here for the team.
Yeah, people can see that website at diodororacing.com. And when you go to the website, right on the homepage, there's a picture of one of your horses in your Diodoro silks, which are white, red, and green. White, and people can't obviously see them here on the radio, so I'll describe them, but they're white. The left sleeve is green. The right sleeve is red. There's a white and green cap on the rider and a green D in the middle of a red circle, which is on the front and the back of the silks. Tell me about the colors and the silk design. How did that all come about?
The design, I don't know where it comes from, to be honest. I just put it together. The colors are a family tradition, kind of. My dad is Italian, and that's the colors of the Italian flag. When my grandpa trained, he had the same colors. And when I took over, I remember I went to change the green to black. And I changed a few things. I remember, you know, this is back when I had a couple horses. I ordered a few things, red, white, and black. And roughly, I don't know, 6 months later, a year later, I said, you know what? I'm just going to keep the family colors in the stable and just kept everything red, white, and green. And that's been that way for the last how many years?
Well, it certainly worked out well for you.
Yeah.
Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic. Tipped in, coming up on our commercial break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll get to that momentarily. But Robertino, before we do, which other areas of the country? We talked about your string in New York and Southern California. Which other areas of the country are you currently running horses?
Northlands Park in Edmonton, Canterbury, which is in Shakopee, Minnesota, and then Prairie Meadows in Altoona, Iowa. Kind of home base in the summertime is Canterbury. For my fiance and I, that's, like I said, Phoenix in the wintertime and Minnesota in the summer, and then I just, you know, travel from those places, but those are the home bases.
That's quite a far-flung operation. How do you keep track of all of that?
Again, going back to the assistants, not going to lie, got to depend on them lots, and again, very fortunate to have you know, four really good assistants and, you know, lots of telephone. It's some days it gets just about overwhelming how much time I spend on the phone, but it's a part of the game. And to keep things running smoothly, a guy's got to spend a lot of time on the phone and have good help.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. How often are you in communication with those assistant trainers?
From once to 10 times a day.
And they're all in different time zones.
You know what? It's funny you bring that up. That's probably the biggest killer there is with having strings of horses in different places is the phone calls with the time change and then the traveling. I mean, it kills me lots of times with all the traveling.
Well, he does a lot of traveling, and that's because of the fact he runs a lot of horses and he wins a lot of races. We're visiting with Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk. We're going to get to a short commercial break. On the other side of this, we'll look back on some of his biggest wins. We'll ask him what his favorite horse that he's been around is, and we'll talk to him a little bit about some of those training titles. There have been a few of those, too. That's all next on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Nominate your yearlings now to the Phasic Tipton Summer Selected Yearling Sales. These sales are the top three yearling sales in North America by rate of return. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky, July 10th and 11th. The Saratoga sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 7th and 8th. And the New York Bred sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 12th and 13th. Selected sales, superior results. Nominate today at phasictipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rossemeyer, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Now is the perfect time to own a Kentucky Bred and race in Kentucky. Kentucky Breds win 70% of the greatest stakes in North America, and it's obvious that Kentucky Breds start with a clear advantage. But there's more. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky Bred. come home to Kentucky and make a start. Learn more at KentuckyBred.org.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
A quarter mile to go, a Broadway Empire will take them to the front stretch as well after six furlongs in a minute, 11 and change. Broadway Empire is on top and is opened up by four in the Oklahoma Derby. Broadway Empire all the way on the front. Cameo Appearance and departing after that, battling for second, a furlong to go. Broadway Empire trying to pull the upset here is out by five. The Canadian Derby winner out by six. Carve tries to pick things up. It's Broadway Empire stealing the show in the Oklahoma Derby. Broadway Empire pulls the upset to win it by four. Broadway Empire, a four-length winner over Cameo Appearance. Photos after that.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Broadway Empire getting the victory in the 2013 Oklahoma Handicap, and that was a tremendous race for Broadway Empire. Just so, so impressive that afternoon at Oklahoma Derby, I should say, not Oklahoma Handicap. And it was the first Broadway Empire was the first graded stakes winner for our guest tonight on Trainer Talk, Robertino Diodoro. That was his second graded stakes victory, coming on the heels of a win in the Grade 3 Canadian Derby. Robertino, that has to bring back some nice memories for you.
No, that horse was a lot of fun. You know, when people ask me what really got the stable going and stuff, is I really give that horse a lot of credit for that. He really did, I think, take the whole stable to the next level. We picked up some owners because of that horse. And, you know, he was a fun ride, that horse. You know, he took us to the, you know, winning the Canadian Derby, which is, you know, a lot of people's dreams that live in Canada or grew up in Canada, including mine. And he was I've won the Canadian Derby a couple times, but he was the first one I won it with. You know, he took us to the Breeders' Cup, the Met Mile, course Oklahoma, and took us on quite a ride, that horse, for sure.
How did you get him?
Very long and weird story, but
we like those.
Bought a package of horses off of Bob Bones, and it just went from there. It was kind of a weird deal, and you know, outfit or client that I really think probably, you know, got their attention was a Mercedes stable, because they bred them, and shortly after then I started training for them, and I still do train for them, and they've been you know, a big help to getting their stable to the next level. And like I said, I give that horse a lot of, he really brought a lot of attention to the stable, and like I said, a lot of enjoyment too.
How about that Canadian Derby? When you won that, take me back to that day. What was that moment like for you, and what was the celebration like afterwards?
It was pretty crazy. It was, you know, it's kind of funny because Randy Haugen and I, we talk about it quite a bit, how we were pretty nervous because all the pressure was on us, and the horse had a quarter crack at the time. If it wasn't for a friend of mine, John McKenzie, that horse probably would have never made it, and I always say to this day that horse made over $500,000. If it wasn't for John, the horse probably would have been lucky to make $50,000, because he had quarter cracks all his life. And John's one of the best quarter crack blacksmiths in the country. And we flew him just about everywhere that horse went. John was shortly behind him because the horse had chronic feet problems. And, you know, it really flared up during the going into the Canadian Derby, and between everyone knowing and thinking that we had the best horse by far in the race, and then dealing with quarter cracks, I had a lot of pressure on us that day. I'll never forget that. And then it was just a beautiful day, and race was, I think, the 10th or 11th race of the day. Halfway through the card, the skies opened up, and the track went from a dry, fast track to just literally a foot of slop. I'll never forget that. But he overcome it, and it was it was always a dream to win the Canadian Derby. So it was a pretty good feeling. But I think the biggest thrill was winning the Oklahoma Derby. We had no pressure on us. We, we didn't pay much for the horse. The horse had already taken us to, gave us some excitement. And Randy Haug and I, we both talk about it still this day. How, we just felt like there wasn't a whole bunch of pressure going into the Oklahoma Derby. Everyone was talking about the Pardon, and we were just kind of the underdog there. And I think we enjoyed that one a little more.
You said you won the Canadian Derby twice. Talk about the other one.
The next year we won it with a horse, Edison. So we won it 2 years in a row. And actually last year we should have won it, to be honest. We had two horses in the race. We ran second and fourth, and there was about a 20-minute inquiry on the winner, and I really thought we should have probably won that race. Both horses got rough trips, and one horse got bothered late, but it was still a good race and a good time.
Oh, I can imagine it's always a good time when you're winning grade threes like that and taking the Canadian Derby for a second consecutive year. Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Robertino, it would be a couple more years before you would win another greatest stakes. That would come at Oaklawn in the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint in 2016 with Subtle Indian. Tell me about that race.
He was a horse that we got from Mercedes Stable, and he was actually a fun horse to train, but he was a stressful horse. And what I mean by that, he was his own worst enemy, especially younger in his career. He was a very high-energy horse. He was a handful. And the very first time we ever ran that horse, he was in a maiden allowance in a four-horse field at Turf Paradise, and loaded in the gates. And he lasted about 10 seconds in the gate and literally exploded. And lucky he didn't kill himself and really didn't hurt himself. I'm not sure how, and he was scratched. And 3 weeks later, he was in a maiden allowance at Oaklawn, and once I always say sometimes things happen for a reason, because the purse at Turf Paradise was 11,000, and it was at the time in Oaklawn it was 58 or 62,000, so it was pretty funny how that worked. But he gave us a lot of thrill, that horse, as well. And like I said, he was a stressful horse. So he's one of those horses you have to saddle on the walk in the paddock, and his gait issues early in his career, and he kept the guy on his toes, put it that way.
Looks like you might have been taking a little bit of advantage there in Phoenix, huh?
Actually, that's where Broadway Empire broke his maiden too, was at Turf Paradise.
Wow, what goes through a trainer's mind when something like that happens in the starting gate?
It's not a good feeling, especially a horse that you're high on. I mean, you don't want to see any horse wreck in the gate or get hurt, but it's definitely not a good feeling when it's a horse that you got really high hopes for. And like I said, we did have high hopes. We thought we weren't going to worry about the money. We're just going to, this horse had a lot of immature issues, and we thought, we're just going to run him in Phoenix, not worry about the money. We'll make up that later in his career, and just let him, hopefully win easy and develop him. And again, it didn't work that day, but it all worked out after.
Yeah, he was such a nice horse. And did he have any gait issues after that?
No, he was, actually my assistant Rob Ashris worked with him quite a bit in Oakland that winter. And, he literally lived in the school and gate 5 days a week in Oaklawn there, and we never did have an issue after that.
Well, your most recent greatest stakes victory came earlier this year in the Oaklawn Handicap with a horse by the name of Inside Straight. Take me back to that day and look back on that race and tell me the story of Inside Straight.
A horse that we bought through an agent last summer. We bought it for Randy Haug for the Canadian Derby, and he's turned out to be unbelievable. I can't say enough about the horse. He just surprises us every day, being starting from not being that big of a horse to very well-traveled horse. I don't know how many times we said we're going to, you know, maybe we should just give this horse a break, turn him out. He's done for now, and he just keeps on going. I mean, I just was in Belmont last weekend or last week where he is. He's never looked so good. My assistants that's been with him basically from since we've had him, Rob Ashes, he says the same thing. Can't believe it. I mean, the horse is, just coming in his four-year-old year. He's filling out. And coat-wise, it's the best he's ever looked. So he's going to run June 10th. That's the plan right now, to run him in the Met Mile. And he worked really well a few days ago, and that's what we're pointing him towards.
That race looks like it's going to be pretty salty this year, including your horse. What do you think about that?
No, that is a concern. I mean, I've never really seen the Met Mile come up soft, and I think you're right. I think it's going to come up very salty this year, but we'll just see what happens. I know a lot of guys didn't give us much of a shot in the Oakland Handicap. That's why he went off at 19-1, and I really don't blame them. Probably going to be the same thing this go-around, but you know, my saying is, let's worry about our horse and not everyone else. Let's not worry about who's coming and who's not coming. If our horse is 100%, we're running. If he's 95% or 98%, we're not running in any race. So, the horse doesn't owe us anything. So every time we lead him over there, we want to make sure he's 110%.
Well, that's such a great way to look at it. And I don't know if there's any other way that you can look at it. Just worry about what you can control, and the only thing you can control is what's happening with inside straight, and you get him to 100% and take your best shot in a race like that in the Met Mile. What is it about him, Robertino, that's giving you an indication though that he seems to fit at that level?
Well, again, he's a horse, you know, he's a well-bred horse. I think he'll run all day. And what I like about him is he's just getting better and better. You know, when we bought him, he was an okay horse. I think he was a little immature. And, you know, just from mentally and physically, the horse has just got better and better. And, I think in Oakland Handicap, you know, I remember going in the race. I said, to win this race, he's really going to have to take the next step up. And he did. He's going to have to do it again. And he's showing all signs that he's capable of it, just the way he's training. I know my assistant Rob Atrus, he's one guy, he doesn't sugarcoat nothing, and he's amazed with the horses, the way he's training right now. And again, when I seen him the other day, I just walked up to a stall and I was like, wow, because I thought he looked maybe a little burnt out a little bit in Oakland, and he looks better than ever right now. He's put some weight back on, his coat's good, and training great. Like I said, just got to go into a race like that just worrying about our horse. And that's kind of been my attitude with when I look back on a few different races, shortly here talking about Broadway Empire and the Oklahoma Derby. I remember a couple guys tell me, what are you wasting all that money going there, everyone flying there, there's no way a guy can beat the Pardon. You know what, I'm gonna worry about our horse. I'm not worrying about the Pardon. They can bring whoever they want. I'm gonna worry about our horse if he's not ready. And that's the way, I've looked at a lot of bigger races. You know, claiming races, that's different. But a lot of these bigger races, and, just even the Canadian Derby, going to the Zia Park Derby, et cetera, I always say, let's worry about our own horse. I drill that into my owner's heads and my assistant's heads that, let's worry about our horse. And our horse isn't 100%. I don't care. We're not running them anywhere. These better horses, we want to, they don't, again, like horses like Broadway Empire, Inside State, they didn't owe us anything, Subtle Indian. Let's make sure they're 100% before they get led over there.
It's always easy to find a horse to be afraid of, even in a cheap claiming race. So, and a lot of people don't realize, too, that horses develop as they get older, 4, 5, 6 years old. They can get better and better, and your horse certainly is on the cusp of that. He's improving all the time, and And that's something as a handicapper I look for. And I think a lot of people don't take that into consideration. Just because a horse's numbers may not have been up to snuff with the favorite doesn't mean he can't run a number that's equal to the favorite if he's doing good and improving.
No, for sure. And, you know, the old saying is, don't ever think these horses don't know when they win either. And, you know, this horse right now, he thinks he's King Kong, really. So, like you said, horses develop, you know, develop later. And like I said, this horse is on the right track.
You know, that's interesting, Robertino. I did a few interviews leading up to our Preakness broadcast this past weekend, and they were with some of our affiliates around the country, and some of those not in racing meccas and racing markets, for example. And one question that was brought up to me was, do racehorses actually know when they've done something great or good on the racetrack? And do they know if maybe they're not, you know, doing something well and not living up to the standards that we have for them? Do racehorses actually know that kind of stuff?
I really think they do, you know. And, you know, I always say, you know, a horse knows when they win and the horse knows when they lose. You know, you'll see a horse get beat up a couple times and all of a sudden they don't train the same. They don't eat the same, you know. Their actions in their stalls are different. I always say, don't ever say a horse doesn't know when they win or lose, you know? So I always compare a horse to an athlete. It doesn't matter how much talent they got, if they don't have the heart, you know, they're not worth nothing, you know? And I said, this horse has got a big heart right now, and we'll give it a try.
Talking with Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows. They're available for you on our website and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Robertino, what's the most difficult part about training racehorses for a living?
That's a good question. Keeping everyone happy. That's a, you know, that's a big part of training. You got to keep everyone happy. You got to keep the health happy, the horses happy, clients happy. You know, that's tough. And dealing with losing. I always said I hate losing, and I thought I'd get better as I got older, and I think I've got worse. it drives me nuts. I cannot stand losing. Competitiveness in me, and like I said, if the guy ain't competitive, I don't think we'd be in this game. And I think that is really probably the toughest part, dealing with losing, dealing with going into slumps. It doesn't matter if you're top trainer in the country or the bottom of the barrel, everyone ends up in slumps here and there, and I never get used to it. It's the toughest part. We, you know, just a few weeks ago, we went into a 10-day, 2-week slump, and it felt like it was 2 months, and felt like the world was coming to an end. And we snapped out of it, and excuse me, had a good weekend this past weekend or week. And but like I said, that's probably the toughest part of this game is dealing with the losing. And it seems like when you're losing or in a slump, there's extra stress that comes with it as well. I think that's the toughest part of training, dealing with losing.
How difficult is it not to question your philosophies and your methods when you're going through a slump like that?
Yeah, no, it is a little bit once in a while, but again, you just got to remember, you know, if it's, say, a month slump, what did we do the last 11 months here? We've had a pretty good year. You know, are we doing the same things? If the answer is yes, which it should be, then why are we going to change? We just got to somehow bear through it. Things will turn around. That's what we tell ourselves. Again, it's easier said than done to deal with it, though. But you just got to keep doing what you've been doing that got us where we're at, and things will turn around.
All right, so let me flip this around for you then. What's the most rewarding part of being a horse trainer for a living?
Winning races. And again, I don't care if it's a graded stake or a bottom claimer at Turf Paradise. It's the biggest rush. I I just, nothing tops it, to be honest.
Do you find, since you're racing on, you know, four or five different fronts at a time, that it helps in the slump factor, like your stable at Prairie Meadows might be doing well, maybe you're not doing so good at Canterbury and vice versa, or the horse in California, you're picking everybody up. Do you find that it works that way a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. And that helps get through a slump too. I mean, you know, we not too often that they all five locations go into a slump and not all five get rolling. But you know, there's a few times when they do get rolling all at once, and that's fun when that happens. But you're right. It's definitely, if you're in a slump somewhere and somewhere else is winning, it definitely helps get through where you're at, or the place that you're in a slump at, for sure.
One racetrack you've been able to keep it rolling is Canterbury Park in Minnesota, and you've had a rivalry with longtime champion trainer Mac Robertson, and I'll call it a rivalry. I know there's always this respect between trainers because everybody's doing the same thing, but Mac had won 9 consecutive titles at Canterbury until you came along and took that title in 2014. You won the leading trainer title again in 2015, but last year it was Mac who turned the tables on you, regained his title, and did it in convincing fashion. He finished 22 wins ahead of you last year. Tell me about that rivalry and that camaraderie, I guess, that exists between trainers like this at a meet when they're going back and forth.
No, it's fun. You know, it's been a fun 3 years here, and I think he's helped our business, and even me personally. It's made us want to succeed even more here, and I respect him. He's a good horseman, and I talk to him quite often, you know, on just about a daily basis when I am in Canterbury, and said he runs a good outfit. He's got some good horses, and I think he respects us and we respect him. You know, it's been a lot of fun. I'll never forget the first year that we beat him. It was probably the best day I've ever had in race. It was just crazy. Went into the day one behind him and ended up winning 6 races that day and beat him by 5. And he was the first guy that texted me or called me after to congratulate me.
That's impressive. 5 wins, 5 wins ahead after being one down going in. You must have, did you drop them all from the clouds? What'd you do?
You know what? Honestly, if you watch the races, the last 3 days of that meet, I remember Rob Atrus is the one that said, one of my assistants, that he wasn't here at the time, but he was really watching it. He said, your horses and your riders are all running and riding like they're possessed. Like they were just, I mean, I compare it to hockey. I remember the first or second race that we won on that final day. It was a horse that I owned the horse. He had no chance on paper, and the horse won. I come out of the winner's circle, and I remember saying to a guy, if this was a Stanley Cup Finals, it was like your fourth line just come through and won a race for you, scored a goal, you know. It was pretty crazy. It was Paul Allen, the announcer here at Canterbury, he really got into it, so he got the crowd into it, and it was a pretty fun weekend, and the last day was, I'll never forget as long as I live, my assistant at the time in Canterbury, Kent Knutson, him and I talk about it all the time, and still get revved up and goosebumps about it because it was a pretty neat day for sure.
Well, I'm sure on the ice there's plenty of smack talk that goes on when you're playing hockey. How about among rival trainers like that? Do you have a little fun and maybe needle each other a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that year or the last couple, when it gets down to near the end, it's all there's not too much joking, but throughout the year there is. You know, I remember Mac giving me a shot the other day saying, well, you've won a race here at the meet this year, haven't you? I'm like, don't tell me you're not watching, Mac.
I remember one time Bobby Frankel and Laz Barrera were fighting out for the title at Hollywood Park, and Bobby Frankel brought me an envelope with $3,000 in it and said, I want you to bet $100 on every horse Laz runs, because if he beats me in the trainer title, at least I'll make some money.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Robertino Diodoro, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Really enjoyed the visit. Only a couple minutes left. If you missed any portion of the show, you can go to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows. They're all there for you on our website. Robertino, we're going to do something here. I always like to end the program by asking trainers to tell us a little bit about themselves that people might not know. So this is the first time I've ever incorporated this segment on the show. And if it goes well, maybe we'll do it with every trainer from here on out at the end of the program. But we're going to call it Five Fast Facts to Know about Robertino Diodoro. Okay, so I'm going to ask you five questions. They'll be very simple. You go ahead and answer them, and we'll go question to question. So here we go. Your favorite movie?
Slapshot.
Shocker. Favorite food?
Prime rib.
Ooh, all right. Favorite musical artist?
George Strait.
Well done. Good choice. Favorite horse of all time?
One that I trained, Broadway Empire.
All right, there you go. And how about the hockey player that you idolized growing up?
Ron Hextall.
There it is. Five fast facts to know about Robertino Diodoro. Oh, wait, one more. This is not associated with this new segment. I kind of like the way that went, though. One more for you. Who's going to win the Stanley Cup this year?
Ooh. Got to cheer for Nashville. I think the more I watch the highlights of that, they seem like a good bunch of guys. Love the coach. Got to cheer for Nashville.
All right, there it is. Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Robertino, appreciate all the time, my friend. Look forward to seeing you in Belmont here in a couple of weeks, and all the best moving forward.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me, you guys.
All right, Robertino Diodoro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. A lot of fun, JT.
Yeah, good show. Love it.
All right, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk. We'll talk to you next time here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.